What is the science of reading? What are leaders doing to accelerate reading achievement? We answer these questions and more in Science of Reading Leadership, Guiding Minds, Transforming Lives, powered by Just Right Reader.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Science of Reading Leadership Podcast. This week, our guest is the amazing Dr. Sara Lupo, who is an associate professor at James Madison University. Dr. Lupo has extensive reading teaching experience, including working as an English teacher, ESL teacher, reading specialist, and literacy coach. Her work focuses on teaching disciplinary literacy in grades K through 6, infusing content with reading, writing, and language, and scaffolding strategies to support readers and reading tougher texts for 6th through 12th graders. Dr. Lupo, welcome. We're so excited to have you.
Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I am really excited about this conversation. I love early literacy. That's like my passion point. But I also love getting into conversations where we talk about the whole spectrum of education. So this is exciting for me. So I want to jump right in and ask the question, what got you into the field of education? Like, what led you to pursue a career in literacy and research? Or like, where did you get that passion about this work?
Sure. I'll tell you my very complicated story.
I love it. I love complicated stories.
Everyone always told me, you should be a teacher. And when I was younger, I did lots of work with kids. In college, I was a big sister. And I didn't study to be a teacher. And then when I graduated, I did an AmeriCorps program. And I got a job teaching. And so I started teaching with no background, no experience, nothing. And I was in Phoenix working with lots of children, especially who were language learners from backgrounds where they had a lot of interrupted formal schooling. And it got me really interested in literacy in particular. Oftentimes that was their biggest struggle. And so it got me really thinking about how to help support them. And it really got me interested in thinking about working with kids from multilingual backgrounds and how we could really try to view students from a place of strength rather than a place of deficit in order to help support them. After that, I had a little bit of a travel bug and I decided I wanted to teach abroad. And so I went abroad and I taught English as a second language for 4 years in Istanbul, Turkey. And there I taught kindergarten, first and second grade, and basically just had this literacy block where we did reading and writing activities. And I was teaching English at the same time. And that really developed my understanding of how to teach those more early literacy skills and continued to develop my passion, certainly for working with multilingual learners. When I came back, I got a job in DC at a charter school. And I was the 8th grade English teacher. And there they handed me a class of students that had trouble, who were 8th graders, but had trouble reading. And that's where I was like, wow, intervention. Like, what do I do? Like, how do I help these older readers who are super smart and just have really great thinking skills, but really are struggling to sound out words on the page? And so there I decided to go back to school and get my master's in reading education at UVA. I ended up then in my last 5 years of K through 12 teaching as a high school reading specialist in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then UVA sucked me back in and tricked me into getting a PhD in literacy education. And really, like, one of the reasons I wanted to go study literacy was because even after I got my master's and then I, you know, spent 5 more years working as a reading specialist, I just felt like we didn't have the answers for helping older readers. And I felt like oftentimes people were drawing from research with younger readers and giving me advice on what to do with older readers. And then I try it and it didn't work. And it wasn't respectful of their backgrounds and their developmental period that they were in. And so that's really why I wanted to go back and study that. And also as a literacy coach, it was great. I got to go into science classrooms and social studies classrooms. And that got me really interested in disciplinary literacy and really seeing how literacy impacts all learning. And got me really thinking about how we can help students, not just in that intervention block, but how do we help support students in science and ELA and math and social studies as well?
This is fantastic. Like, this is really where the conversation needs to go.
Oh, yeah. Especially because
Go ahead, Christy.
Going to say so much of the science of reading focuses on those primary grades, but we all know that we've had experience with students who are much older who maybe didn't have that foundation. So now we're intervening. But also, like you said, the other side of that is the tier one of how do we infuse these literacy skills into content areas.
I just want to follow up one thing with what you said. I mean, I think that sometimes we're trying to intervene our way out of a tier one problem. And you can't really intervene your way out of tier one instruction problems. You really need to have good tier one instruction that has good literacy supports in place across the board. And then we can help support students in addition to that. And so I found myself often telling people, like, there's not this magical thing I can do in 45 minutes a day to help readers. Like, we have to do this all day long in order to really support these older readers who've got gaps in their foundational word reading skills.
Not even so much the pivot, just taking the conversation to like these older readers, because I really do think that that is the, when people talk about what's the gap, that's really the gap right now. Like that's the gap in the research. That's the gap in the strategy. The question that you answered or the that you posed that someone said to you is exactly where I was having my struggles in the classroom. You know, when I'm teaching older learners and they have those gaps in the foundational literacy, mm-hmm. one thing you said that was so powerful is we're not honoring their background. We're not honoring where they are because we're giving them baby books or, K Counting through
syllables two. On the arm. No.
Right. No. And that's disconnecting and disrespecting their age, their experience. So I kind of want to hear a little bit more about older readers, maybe what they need. Your expertise really focuses on that. And so we focus on early readers in the science of reading, but what are you finding? What is your research showing you? How can we help these older learners?
Ooh, I could talk about that all day long. So you just got to tell me when to stop.
Let's do it.
I love that conversation.
What we're seeing is the same thing that I have experienced in the classroom. We have these older learners who have a wealth of information. You know, you talked about this idea that you wanted to learn how to teach kids from their place of strength rather than the deficits that we can pinpoint. So I want to talk about how do we honor their background, honor their maturity levels, but still address the gaps that we're seeing that are preventing them from having success in their reading. So what is the research you're seeing, or what is the research you're doing? What are some strategies that we can really use to give them what they need?
Yeah, that's a huge question. I love that question, though. So I would say there's some really cool research on agency that I think is just really worth looking at. It's so much of it is tied to us and how we feel about ourselves. And so I think that we just have to be so, so careful at thinking about how we speak about our students and their literacy skills and how we position them. Because even if we're saying things not in front of them, it's changing how we speak in front of them. And so I think that the one thing I tell folks first is you want to think of all your students as bringing strengths to the classroom. And we want to search for those strengths. And they may not be the typical strengths that we're used to or we would expect or we would hope even that they have. But all of our students bring strength. They bring strengths in the area of knowledge. It may not be academic knowledge, or it may not be the things that we were hoping they would have that would help them understand this particular text, but they bring something to the table. And we can find those things and we can help them leverage the things that they do know to understand the text that are sitting in front of them. And we can also do that through thoughtful text selection. So if I know, all right, my students don't know a ton about this topic over here, but they know a lot about this, can I find an article that helps bridge the knowledge they have with this thing that we're trying to learn? And I find that I've been able to do that over and over again. And it really helps students kind of see the relevance of some of these topics, and it helps them be able to access what they do know to help them make sense of a text. There's a ton of research just on identity and positioning. And so I really try to be cautious about how I talk about my reader's skills. And I did some research with some colleagues who are so much smarter than I am. and what we found is that as teachers learned more about literacy, they were better able to talk about literacy in more affirming ways for students and more specific ways. And the less they knew about literacy, and secondary teachers aren't trained in it. So secondary teachers often don't know much about literacy. And that's what would often lead to more deficit-like talk, because they didn't know what might be going wrong. And so they would start, you know, saying this is a third grade level reader, which really that sentence doesn't even make sense with the research. It's positioning the child in a very weak way. And it's not showing that child actually might have some strengths in literacy. Instead, what we found is when we were able to teach them things about literacy, they could say, this child has really good understanding of certain concepts, but they have trouble sounding out multisyllabic words. And that's just a much more thoughtful way of addressing readers. And then it's something that we can do something about. All right, they have trouble sounding out multisyllabic words. Cool. I got like three strategies that you can use. Here they are. And so I think when we can be more specific about what the troubles are and less focused on, say, reading levels or behind grade level or below and these kind of comparative type terms, it's so much more respectful of our students and viewing all of our students as coming from a place of strength.
Sarah, I love that you said that, kind of talking about getting away from this verbiage of reading levels. I've heard you say, because I've gotten to see you present and speak before, you've used the word reading stages. Can you tell us kind of a little bit about what the difference between reading levels and reading stages might be?
That has helped a lot of teachers just gain more confidence in how to help their readers who have struggles, but also reframe the way that they're talking about their readers from less of a deficit perspective and more of a strengths-based perspective, while being specific about the things that readers need to improve on. Because when I say we want to approach all our readers as having strengths, I'm not saying we want to ignore some glaring literacy issues that they have. Some of our students do have glaring literacy issues. A lot of the students that I've worked with had interrupted formal schooling. And so as a result, their literacy skills are a little bit different. And some of them didn't have that. And they just didn't have really good foundational skills instruction, or they were dyslexic and needed more than what was given to them. So what reading levels are just really unhelpful. They don't really tell us anything about why a reader might be struggling, what things are going to actually help a reader improve. Whereas reading stages, and I like ARIES stages in terms of thinking about reading stages. Reading stages tell us what a reader should already know and what a reader is supposed to be learning at that stage. And so we can use the data that we have on students, or we can gather data on our students to figure out their reading stage. And ARIES stages starts with pre-alphabetic, which means they don't have any letters and they don't have any sounds, right? They don't know any letters, they don't know any sounds. Then there's partial alphabetic. They know some of their letters and a sound for some of those letters, but they don't know all their letters and all of their sounds. And then there's full alphabetic. Those readers know all their letters and a sound for all those letters, but they're still really working on that automatic letter sound retrieval. So they might look at the word cat and they have to stop and think, what's that first letter? That's a C. What sound does that make? Whereas a reader who's gotten beyond that stage can look and just think when they see C, or even just cat when they see the word cat. And then we have students at the consolidated alphabetic stage. And these readers have that automatic letter sound retrieval, but they're now learning more complex patterns. And so this is where we want students in books with complicated consonant clusters, like DGE making the J sound and EA making the long E sound. And we're teaching them all these different patterns that these different letters can make. And that's where a lot of older readers have gotten stuck. And they're kind of still there. Consolidated readers are working on building automaticity, and they are working on prosody, so expression and intonation. And a lot of readers just get stuck here. And so once we can identify, okay, this is a consolidated reader, it lets us know what we need to work on. And so we can work on those particular things. We can give students books that have those patterns that they need to learn, and we can give them instruction around prosody to help them. And what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of older readers were smart enough to kind of figure their way through some of the easier texts that were given to them in the early grades. And then suddenly the texts get really hard, usually around fourth grade. And now they've got all these really big words that they don't know what they mean. And oftentimes our older readers really have a vocabulary problem more than anything else. And so to develop automaticity, what the research shows us is that you have to know the meaning of the word also. And so we always want to be pairing any of our fluency and prosody instruction with good syntax instruction. So understanding complicated sentences and good vocabulary instruction. And morphology instruction, I mean, is huge. I mean, it helps readers a ton at this stage. And so understanding that helps teachers know that this is what they need to learn. And it helps them be a little bit more specific, as I mentioned earlier, in what readers need to really work on.
And it sounds like to me that we're really focusing in on two different types of text, right? So text for learning to read, and then text for building that vocabulary and knowledge that you're just pointing out. And as we move into these upper grades, how can we as educators know the difference, be able to highlight the difference, and really be intentional about our selective text?
I like using what I call the quad text set framework. And here in all my like sort of mini units, you know, we know that for improving readers' comprehension and vocabulary, smaller thematic units are really helpful. We can build knowledge thoughtfully. We can read connected texts, so different kinds of texts that connect to each other. And the quad text set framework is great for helping kind of reach readers from that strengths-based perspective. And so the quad text set starts with choosing a challenging target text that's going to be hard for readers. So it's intentionally going in and saying, I'm going to give them a challenge. I'm going to give them something that's going to be a reach. And it might be hard in terms of vocabulary. It might be hard in terms of complex sentence structures. It might be hard in terms of text structure and just how the text is organized. It might be hard because of word reading skills, and they're going to have trouble sounding the words out. But it should have some challenges to it, or conceptually just difficult. I call it dense ideas, like really abstract concepts. Sometimes our secondary text, that's what's hard. It's like photosynthesis. It's just hard to understand. And then you want to choose easier to read informational texts that will help build knowledge and vocabulary so that that harder text isn't quite so hard. And then we want to choose maybe a visual, a video, a picture, a map that will help build some knowledge. And then lastly, we want to pick what I call a hook text. And that's a text that kind of makes the topic relevant. And that's where we can really think about our readers' strengths that they're bringing to the situation. What's going to get these particular students excited about photosynthesis? Can I find a text that will help them do that? And I've written several articles about quad text sets that I can share. And I've got, I think, a lot of resources all around. And so if anyone's interested, just reach out.
Quad text sets. That's fabulous. That's excellent. This episode is brought to you by Just Right Reader. Extend phonics instruction, strengthen school-home partnerships, and accelerate reading achievement with take-home decodable packs from Just Right Reader. Personalized take-home packs make phonics fun and accessible for families. Every book comes with a video phonics lesson and writing pages to help readers reinforce their decoding and writing skills. To learn more, visit justwritereader.com.
Dr. Lupo, when we think about providing these students with content-rich text and trying to scaffold them into more difficult text, tell me kind of what you think on that administrator side, what administrators can do to support teachers during this shift.
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think there's two really simple things that administrators can do that will help this. One is support teachers in having access to really good texts, a variety of texts. And I think this goes beyond giving just a Newzella subscription. I don't think Newzella is super high quality. I'm not saying Newzella is bad. It's fine to have some Newzella texts, but we need to get kids in rich texts with rich vocabulary and making sure that they have access to those resources. Buying novels for kids, buying other books and other subscriptions to rich things, making sure there's a textbook for every subject so that we have access to some rich target texts that are written in ways that are beautiful and thoughtful with rich syntax and rich vocabulary. I find the informational texts and the hook texts are easier to find on the internet. That's where I do draw from Newzella and other sources. But I find that those target texts are what teachers really struggle to get. And so supporting them by making sure they have access to those texts. And I think alongside that, supporting them and making sure that if they don't have a curriculum that already has a lot of those pieces built in, giving them really good planning time and paying them for that planning time that might happen beyond school. Because if they don't have a curriculum that has some of those pieces in and they just have to pick it up and look and see, oh, I need just to add a hook or I need just to add this informational, and they're having to build them from scratch, it's super time consuming. And then I'd say the other thing is just expecting them to use them and walking around and finding the teachers that are using it, highlighting those examples, getting other teachers into the classroom to watch them use that, making PLC time about talking about selecting texts in this particular kind of framework, I think is the other thing that can be helpful.
That's fantastic. So, and you may have already addressed this, and I know that sometimes as practitioners, we like solid strategy type things. So another form of your research or another area of your research that you talk about is how we can support or scaffold readers so that they can read harder text. So, and like I said, you might have already talked about it in terms of like the theory of action, but can you share a little bit more about that in terms of like how we do that?
Sure. Yes. I love that. I love that topic. So I'm happy to chat about that. And I've written two books on it now. So if you teach K through six, I already have a book out there. It's available on Amazon. And perhaps you can link it in your show notes. And it's called Teaching Disciplinary Literacy K through six. And it really describes how we scaffold and how we bring knowledge building into the literacy block, how we can embed science and social studies there. And it's got a couple great chapters on just how you can develop that toolbox for scaffolding. And so it's got just a number of great strategies. And then my other book that's coming out this year is called Tackling Tough Texts, and same kind of concept, but for 6 through 12, but rather how we can do this in science, in social studies, and in ELA. And so I think that the first step is realizing that our students are capable and can do this as long as we provide the good supports. The second step is just forgetting about reading levels as what you would use. And so instead of thinking about this is a third grade level reader, they can't read this ninth grade level text, just let's figure out how to support the student to be able to read this. And then the third step is drawing from a good toolbox of scaffolding strategies. So I love writing to learn strategies. I think they're super helpful. Like a double entry journal is one of my favorite scaffolding strategies. And so I'll direct my students thinking as we're reading, draw some quotes out about this particular topic, write those quotes here, or even just highlight sometimes in the text. And then you're going to reflect on those quotes here, and I'll direct their thinking a little bit there. Another strategy that I love is called probable passage. And so you draw some really big vocabulary words out that you know your students might have some trouble with prior to reading. And students will categorize those words, and they'll think about characters or people, problems, solutions, setting. You can change those topics up for science texts into slightly different categories, and they'll put them into those categories. It gives us a chance with some of my readers who've got foundational word reading skill issues to practice sounding those out. I might define a couple of them quickly. And then they read the text, and then they come back afterwards and they try to move the words around. So it's kind of a comprehension strategy, but it helps support their ability to kind of draw connections between words as well. And then it gives them three really good exposures to those vocabulary words too. So I could go on all day about that, but those are a few of the ones that I love. And so I think it's just having that really good toolbox. And then I think the biggest mistake that I sometimes see people make in terms of scaffolding is not scaffolding the actual challenges in the text. So it really requires understanding what is actually hard about the text and making sure that you have a scaffold that supports that. So I could put in a great word reading scaffold, but if what's hard about the text is the text structure, that's not going to help my students. So it really means analyzing text, understanding the text, and then providing a scaffold that actually helps students overcome that particular challenge. And moving away from thinking about reading levels is helpful there, because reading levels doesn't tell us anything about what's hard. Instead, we want to look and analyze the challenges and scaffold those challenges.
Sarah, you always just have the most practical advice and wisdom. And you're really highlighting too some of the things that we've gotten away from as schools and teachers in terms of, you know, like making sure that kids have textbooks and making sure kids have copies of the text versus just a teacher reading aloud. And I'd love to know too, is there any current research that you are excited about, whether it's your own or colleagues?
There's so much. I'm really in a lucky position right now to get to answer that question, because I'm guest editing a special issue of a journal right now. And we are, my co-editors and I, are guest editing a special issue on foundational word reading skills for older readers for JAL, the Journal of Adult and Adolescent Literacy. And so I'm currently knee deep in all this amazing research that folks have done around how do we help support foundational word reading skills for older readers. And I would say that I'm most excited about the ways that people are thinking about morphology instruction and how we can connect that, for older readers to help them be able to sound out words better with multi-syllabic word reading instruction. And I'm super excited about how people are really thinking about our language learners and how we can use some of their linguistic skills in their first language as strengths to really help support them in their reading, rather than viewing language learners as having a deficit. I always joke that the United States is the only place in the world that views knowledge of a second language as a deficit. When I lived abroad and went other places, they're like, you only speak English? That's so weird. And here we're like, oh, you have a second language other than English? You must be not as good at English and therefore worse. And that's a terrible way to look at people, but we need to change that. And so viewing language learners as bringing linguistic strengths to the situation, and particularly our older readers, I just think is really helpful.
Yeah, I love that. I love what I hear a lot in what you're sharing is a shift in perspective, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then from there, a building on how we help these students. And I think that that's always a great way to come at it, is let's change how we look at this so we can see a clearer path forward. So I appreciate that. I have two more questions for you. The first is, what didn't we ask you? Like, what would we be missing out on if we had asked? So what is it that you would love to share that we didn't ask?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. You asked so many good questions. It's hard for me to think of something you didn't ask. I think one thing I'm just really excited about recently is just prosody instruction and how much power it has. And so I just think it's such a simple thing that teachers can embed into their practice. And it really can, it just does so many good things. And so what prosody is the expression and intonation, the attention to punctuation as readers read. And I just think that this is, a lot of schools are really focused on speed and accuracy in terms of fluency. And I think especially for our older readers, it's particularly unhelpful. And so there's just all these cool strategies that I've been learning about and reading about and utilizing when I can get into schools and work with children around prosody instruction that I'm super excited about. And so, you know, things like say it like a character, have kids pick out a little passage from the chapter they just read, like one paragraph, and then they can practice reading it a couple times and say it the way they'd imagine a character saying it. And then they can share their interpretation with a partner and then they can analyze it. It does a lot of good things for their word reading skills, but it's also embedding really good comprehension and understanding to it. They have to understand that text in order to really help them. So I think that's the thing I'm just really most excited about recently is prosody instruction.
I love that you bring that out, because one of the things that I learned as a classroom teacher is how much reader's theater helped my children understand what was happening in a story. Mm-hmm. When they could really take on characters and imagine themselves as those characters and then read the script or read the story. It was like a light bulb went off, because it wasn't just now black and white words on a page, but really an experience that they could see themselves in. So I love that, just that simple shift, that simple strategy of that character development, you know, and paying attention to that. So that's fascinating. I'm glad that you brought that out, and I'm glad that you talked about it. And then the question that we always ask our guests when we have them on, you know, teachers, practitioners, principals, district leaders, educators are always having so much information thrown at them. Like there's so much on their plate. What would you say is the most important takeaway that you want our leaders, our educators to take away from this conversation?
Yeah, I find that I'm getting asked the question a lot. Like, we've got all these readers in this middle school, this high school, this later elementary school that are having a lot of trouble with reading. What do we do? And the answer is really quite simple. We get really good, high quality texts, texts with rich language, texts with rich syntax, texts with rich, dense, and beautiful ideas. And we put them in front of kids and we maximize the amount of time and we provide the support that's necessary to help them read it. There's no magic bullet, but really the way that we become better, the way that children become better readers is having more time in text. And I think that the quality matters. And I think that's something we're not paying enough attention to. I'm seeing lots of time in some schools with lower quality texts and then not great reading growth. And it makes me think the kids aren't getting exposed to really dense and beautiful ideas. They're not getting exposed to complex syntax and rich vocabulary. And so I'd say quality text is huge. And then increasing the amount of time that kids are reading and writing about those texts during the literacy block and outside the literacy block, and making sure that if we're truly going to accelerate, especially with our older readers, they need to learn independence, and we need to be having them read as much as possible. And so just however much we can maximize that time in text, talking about the text and reading and writing about those texts will help improve their literacy skills. It's really quite simple.
It's just that simple. I love it. This has been a treat. I am so excited that we got an opportunity to sit down and have this conversation. I know that our listeners are going to find so much value in everything that you've shared today. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. Until next time, join us for our next conversation, and we'll see you later. Thanks for joining us. If you found this conversation valuable, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Science of Reading Leadership, Guiding Minds, Transforming Lives.